seated were we all once again. My father, Peter, and Gwen, my mother. I assumed my usual dog-chewed seat. My name was Kevin, and I was their son. The chair I currently occupied was more dog-chewed than a chair, precariously held together by a few rusty hinges and overstrained pieces of material that dog teeth hadn't quite managed to access. A deceptively comfortable chair until it suffered its inevitable collapse, for few chairs could withstand the sustained assault from our iron-jawed hounds. Lindsay had arrived early. Nothing especially out of the ordinary marked her arrival. No cell phone zombies, no reptoid escorts. She hadn't been beamed down by a passing UFO either. All very mundane stuff. Almost disappointing in a way. The varied circumstances which heralded her arrival had certainly added to the evening. She could at least have brought some more exciting biscuits than the rather tired and dull choice she revealed and presented us with. Still, one genetically modified biscuit was as good as another, and a general rule was thus. The tastier and more exotic a biscuit's appearance, the more laced with toxins and mind-bending chemicals it would be. Clutching our biscuits that were so boring, even the tea we intended to dunk them in flowed the opposite direction in protest, we settled in for another evening of real-side dream recounting, as was customary, I would begin. Another mechanically robotic-orientated dream now. My real self must be very magnetic in more ways than one, considering the metallic nature of the individuals and scenarios I draw to myself. My adventure would begin amongst a squabbling group of individuals. I'm not sure why they were squabbling, at least initially. It just seemed squabbling was their preferred choice of activity, and they seemed to be doing so at some checkpoint or gateway or other. My impressions would add extra details to the world I was in, adding background information along with what I was able to determine visually. Seems it was a dystopian mechanical world of a kind. Most of whatever species this was had been mechanized, and the mechanized masses were out of control, rampant, and it surely was mayhem to behold. It would seem that Yes, everything had been robotized, but a few appeared to have a little more control than the others. They were of a less squabbling nature, as though the robotization process had gone awry at some stage and culminated in everybody being deranged. But a few had maintained at least enough of a more socially acceptable way of conduct that they were not a danger to each other. However, these few less afflicted were targeted for destruction by the demented bots. The robots on the run then had organized, located their own, what few of them had survived, and constructed areas of sanctuary, utilizing, it would seem, structures with checkpoints that had been made prior to this descent into robot hell. I could imagine a dystopian world where the controllers, much like today, had erected far greater and a more stringent Orwellian controlled system, with checkpoints everywhere. A little like, in fact, the dream I had mentioned previously, where everybody was robotized, and there were dissidents of the system, with their fake mechanical jaws, as the jaw pieces contained microchips that were scanned at these checkpoints. They had removed these and attempted to instill fake versions to fool the oppressive systems. And in fact, then, I would surmise this to be part two of that very dream, except everything has moved along time frame wise. Something had clearly gone wrong with the robotization then on a grand scale. Maybe a computer virus, as the robots were all linked to a central computer, and as a result, the robots now were faulty, and a few wires short of a circuit board, you might say. Of the controllers, then, there was no sign, but what remained of their control grid and infrastructure remained, yet abandoned and disregarded by the demented robots. So it is these structures, now derelict, that the functioning robots assumed possession of, and reinforcing and bolstering the defences of them, establishing them as safe havens, including a few checkpoints. It is the checkpoints that those of the sane robots on the run from the others would head, as these were by and large serving as the entrances to these sanctuaries. So there I am, at this entrance, and yes, I am a robot too. Of the less likely to bash your metal head in variety, and fighting through the frothing masses of ill-intended mechanicals. They were hunting the likes of me, yes, but weren't that efficient at it. Very clumsy and awkward in their motion, and I was far smaller and more graceful in my mobility and poise. I ducked, weaved, and jumped my way through the mass of mean metal, and managed to get noticed by the checkpoint guards, and was allowed within, after a brief scan and vetting process, to determine my authenticity as one of their own. Inside I went, and it is determined I carry something of value within my circuitry, some information or other. I am attached and wired up to a computer, and my metal forearms alter and mould into a different design, displaying little computer screens with digital information and data. Downloading this, it is revealed I am a carrier of vital information that may assist in the cause. Of what few of our unafflicted variety of robot remained? Seems this data was gleaned from controller computers just before what I may call the fall of the robots, and it contained information as to how to shut down all the robots, reboot them, and in theory bring an end to all this chaos. It's uncertain what would be our fate, but it was believed the reboot would reset every robot to its original parameters and correct all the flaws that this computer virus had exacted, almost like a precautionary fallback reboot installed by the controllers. They may have recognized the possibility of this scenario, but failed to implement it in time. Maybe they were just in hiding, and this was a deliberate cull of the population. Very inventive a method, if this was so. Regardless, the technology that is linked to all robots must still be active, and this information regarding a failsafe reboot available, and somehow I had acquired and downloaded it into my database. Of course, it wasn't as easy an undertaking as it seemed. When is it ever? There were several components, circuits, and such we had to secure, and it was with these we would be able to initiate a robot reset. For whatever reason, the circuits were in the keeping of these strange metallic monstrous creatures that dwelled deep in catacombs, heavily protected by robot creations, who were not individual inhabited, but rather pure autons, whose function was to protect these circuits, as if the mighty monsters who had them wasn't enough. I'm uncertain if this was something the controllers set in place, or if it just ended up being this way. But there it was. So we embarked. A team was deployed to escort me to gather these circuits. Our mission? Breach the defences, eliminate all opposition, destroy the guardian robot monsters, and secure the circuits. And then the circuits could be utilised, along with my mechanical body, and the data it contained, to activate the reset. So battle commenced. We fought bravely, many of us perishing along the way. The journey arduous, the mission an almost impossibility at times. We had to go through mazes and complexes of tunnels, pass through underwater sections, and acquire keys from still further robots to pass still deeper toward our objective. The robots in possession of these keys, which were like small greeny-yellow translucent key cards that scanned at the sealed sections and allowed us entrance, these robots were like oversized robot rodents, and put up quite the fight. I also had knowledge innate, or programmed in, of the route we must take, and of the tests and trials along the way, almost like puzzles to solve, that required we do so, in particular ways and sequences. As an example, we had to flick a series of switches and levers in the correct sequence, or no further could we trespass, and the means by which we did this was stored in my computer database. I surely was a good robot to have around. We never succeeded in our quest. We failed at a certain section, as one other forward individual took it upon himself to assume command and the solving of one of these puzzles, despite my having the information at hand. His unwelcome interference and interjection proved costly. Our way remained barred from us, and it appeared we could not make another attempt. At least at this time, this is where the dream concluded. So, as with part one of this dream from a month or so ago, this is probably the potential future of the human race, or another equally as unfortunate species or dimensional version of Earth. Lindsay still couldn't imagine, it seemed, how one might go from holding a cell phone to being a walking, talking one. But things were moving very swiftly, and but 20 years ago, the cell phones barely were as prominent as today, and originally looked very much like huge walkie-talkies. The rigid robotic vehicles, the destiny of a species, choosing to agree and be programmed with the demise of the planet. the constricting and limiting state of self-conviction, and made more so in this era of control and awareness constriction. The individual and collective created consciousness continually adding more self-imposed and agreed-upon limitation to itself, layers upon layers, and taplines aplenty, and the effect of all of this is a far more rigid and frozen vehicle and body forms, the robot form a reflection of such self-convinced, programmed, and indoctrinated literalism on a mass scale. And in this dream, Robot Hell Part 2, things had continued to deteriorate still further along this degenerative path. The robot vehicles now malfunctioning due to the apparent flaws of such robotization, if linked to central computer systems of this design. It was made this way for the purposes of further control and the further suppression of awareness, and consequently has the effect of the diseased and malfunctioning world featuring in this dream. And yes, I had to admit, robots in Star Wars always seemed so very independent and less troublesome. C-3PO, the golden robot featuring in practically the entire saga, was the least likely to fight, squabble, and instigate mayhem. But the movies always had a tendency to find romantic the most dire of circumstances. The reality of such worlds were never as depicted on the silver screen. Then again, we did have the Terminator franchise, a little more realistic than, say, Wally the Robot. And who can forget the depressed robot from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? I'm not sure which would be worse, a soppy robot, a warlike one, or one that could never stop sulking and complaining. And still there were the rebels, as there were in the original dream, fighting a system they had agreed to, and were the effects of. The idea being not to fight, rebel, or bring down the system, but to supersede it, to step around it through real awareness, or become the effect of the duality of creation. Not fighting the system in this dream, however, more so in pure survival mode, but still in a world of their own cause and effect making, and having to deal with it. It seems that, despite how bad things get, life and the is finds a way to reach certain individuals, locating those with a little risk-taking courage, and encouraging those qualities within them, that through awareness they can better survive in creation, wherever they may find themselves. If the species were locked in controlled robot vehicles, yes, they would still, in theory, be a viable vehicle for experiencing the creation, simulation, and technically could still become more aware and recognize their awareness, their real intent, and the ease. Though the controlling element always a factor, awareness will supersede the limitations of the vehicle, or the limitations imposed upon it, as whatever happens to our body vehicles, be it a disharmonious 5G distortion, or to the extent of robotization, it has nothing to do with our real awareness and the real you that operates these vehicles. So always the potential to become more aware, even if through one's poor life choices and agreed upon restriction, one does find themselves in a dystopian world of chaos and metallic mayhem. As I can imagine that I and these other surviving robots were those who had enough of a connection to our real awareness that when the computer virus hit, we were affected, I'm sure, to an extent, but with our focus not solely on the body vehicle, that we are able to align and view from the position of real awareness, we were less afflicted and able to proceed with our process. A little like how Dwayne suggests that with the advent of 5G, the new you song, and those standing real in the new nowness will be less affected by it, mitigating it to a degree. Also, the information I had in my circuits that would return the robots en masse to their factory settings and presumably place the individuals in, yes, robotic vehicles still, but ones less twisted and distorted. It was along the lines of the knowledge of the ears, those having the information, and the sharing of it, resulting in the potential liberation of individuals from the restriction of creation, or at least providing them an opportunity to better position themselves should they accept and take it on. A worldwide wake-up potentially, affording people, or as in this dream, robots, with a better chance to recognize their real awareness, sweeping away some of the agreed-upon, created consciousness debris that obscures their connection to it with the robot reset. Lindsay remarked how I had spent quite the time in this robot world, and yes, it was quite the epic. I had teased out all manner of details. I wanted to speak further about the battle aspect of the dream, Lindsay not quite understanding why. It is simply a scrap, a metallic dust-up. What more was there to say? Men were always men, regardless of being a robot or a human, as far as she was concerned. And yes, the battling was going on throughout creation, and every corner of the war-torn cosmos. But that didn't include us, the new presentation peoples, as it is about awareness, and gradually superseding such. The Cabal and Dark Forces always want people to think there's always a battle at hand between good and evil, the demons and angels, cats and dogs, etc., etc. These are actualities, but all wars and battles are set-ups. A war is always pre-planned and designed for the purposes of taking over a certain area, a country, a world, a portion of the universe. That planet has better pancake-making facilities than us. Let's go in and lay claim to it through war, etc. Lindsay pointed out how I too was involved in the robot battle, and that those with me are most likely to have been new presentation aware new students. But it was a demonstration mainly, a heads up. But as events unfold, yes, it's likely even aware people will become involved in the created ideas that are battles, taking up the sword to fight a perceived evil. Creation is free will, and that is all, and the confrontation becomes more real, apparent and glaringly obvious, as it surely is becoming. Fires, conspiracies, exposures of the Dark Forces' activities becoming daily occurrence, more people questioning than ever before the world they thought they knew. It's all about recognition and awareness. The people in the robot battle are the ones who go so far, but then no further. People will come and go from the new presentation. Many can mentally grasp what is being said, but they don't see the reality of it. They can have experiences all over creation, and accompanied by the real guides, but it doesn't mean they see it. Life is what it is, it isn't what you decide, are convinced about, or what you think it is. So I am presented with what is to unfold, and given the script to share with others. It's interesting too how much like in the movies you come across an individual representing a bad person who you cannot pass by, who was entrusted and suddenly has an attitude. Lindsay remarked how that was the biggest dream yet, and threatened to pour tea over my head should I dare to attempt to regale her with one even longer. I wonder if the tea would prefer the company of my head more than the biscuits Lindsay had produced. For my last dream share, as the first one had been so lengthy in its telling, I was now sporting a full beard, by the time I had completed it. I declared I would speak of an encounter in a woodland setting, and no, it wouldn't boast tigers, lions, or bears. I imagine it was probably an English wood, as no animals of an alarming nature were present. The most hair-raising creature you're likely to find in a woodland in this little island was a rather irate squirrel, or an oversized moth that might flutter around your head in an intimidating fashion. So nothing to really warrant the bringing of protective firearms over. Of course, I was only assuming it an English woodland, based on the lack of deadly wildlife and on the poor weather conditions. But as plain as the setting may sound at this point, things would certainly take a turn toward the paranormal, as I would now reveal. In this dream, I was in the woods at night with a friend or two. I could not identify them, but they were known to me. We were trying to erect our tents and seemed unable. We were also trying to get a fire started with the same lack of success. And if that wasn't enough, it started to rain, and here we were, with no fire to warm our bones, and no tents to take refuge in. Quite the abysmal real side camping excursion then. But things would take a turn toward the more interesting as the rains receded and the weather cleared to a degree. Angry-looking dark clouds still dominated the night sky, but then there were other lights to be seen, and these were not the stars trying to shine through the obscuring cloud cover. For these lights did move, whole groups of them, as though attached to something, and there were many of these clusters of moving lights, and quite the array of colours too. The clouds diminished a little further, less obscuring of these lights, and we could now behold great spacecraft breaking through them. They were very impressive and breathtaking, vast in their scale and number, and my camping colleagues and I regarded them with the awe they demanded. The scene moved on a few moments. The ships must have landed in the interlude. The occupants disembarked, for now they were among my friends and I. Also, we were amongst a larger group of people than the dream had initially began with. Seems others had joined our number. The inhabitants of the ships were very alien, humanoid, yes, to a degree. I had a little trouble recollecting their features on waking, but they were certainly not human. I've seen the faces of these beings before, maybe a picture somewhere, or who knows. Maybe stirrings from my causal vehicle from prior life encounters. They were also telepathic, and this is how we would converse with them. Well, we were speaking with words, but their responses we would receive in our minds. The impression I had were that these beings were of a benign nature and character. And at this time also, I was joined by Gwen, my mother. It seemed we were all being invited to step aboard the landed ships and accompany the alien folk. Gwen was eager enough to do this, and well, who couldn't pass up the opportunity for a little space flight and galactic sightseeing? I was up for the offer too. As I said, I sensed no malice or deception, and this encouraged my decision. The aliens were, it seems, bringing to people's attention some of the ailments they had, and it seemed our group had afflictions of a nature that would soon cause us to pass onto the next position, to transition from the physical. Both Gwen and I had, apparently, heart-related conditions that very shortly would have us transitioning. Interestingly, they communicated with us in such a way that suggested they were connected to us, that we were somehow intrinsically linked, and how whatever skills and abilities we had acquired up till this point had been assisted by their guiding hands. Then the dream ended. Firstly, the detail of not always recognizing who our associates and friends are, but knowing that they are so, is fairly common an occurrence. In our everyday physical lives, we tend not consider those we know, we simply do, and that is enough. And on the real side, it's more impressions and recognition that identifies people more so than our physical senses. Lindsay was swift to suggest, if I was out camping, the extraordinary quantities of alcohol I am likely to consume certainly may go a way in explaining why recognition of my friends was difficult. At times I didn't know who I was, let alone any others in my midst. I assured her my drinking days were far in the past, as I pushed the empty bottles a little further under the table and better concealed, hopefully. A cunning ploy, but ruined by one of the dogs who fetched one of the beer bottles and presented it to me. But anyway, the woodland was very much representing the physical level, and all the woes and trials that come with it, exemplified by bad weather, fires that won't light, impossible to construct tents, and cold beans. Then my initial view of the next scene was that it was a distraction of a kind, some phenomena or other, an attempt to grasp our attention and focus. For the sight of spacecraft of the degree of resplendence I saw in this dream, had my personal self veritably jumping up and down with captivating exuberance. All this phenomena in creation, from exciting discoveries to Loch Ness monsters to crashed spaceships in Roswell, are just happenings in creation, and have nothing to do with our real awareness. And indeed, our focus on the ears can be derailed, and we can spin off into creation, pursuing knowledge, conspiracies, and chasing yetis, or being chased by them. Also, the dark forces can set up events like this very kind to seduce us, glean our agreements, and attach some restricting taplines, or the influence, knowing what it is we individually find enticing, may have a hand in setting up some of these experiences for the same reason. Distraction, disconnection from awareness, agreement and taplining. Lindsay was a little glazed of eye as I reeled off all the possible scenarios, just to ensure she was paying attention. I suggested how even distractions could stem from overcooked bowls of porridge. If overcooking was a threat to my awareness, I would do well to avoid eating meals at Lindsay's house. Naturally, that last suggestion had a reaction. So safe was I in the knowledge Lindsay's attention was maintained. The aliens who emerged seemed to be benign. My little personal self had ceased jumping about in UFO-related excitement, and my real self had come to the fore. And through my awareness, I could glean insight into the intent of the visitors, and they harboured no ill will. Is this something, then, to do with the intergalactic happenings, some kind of alien intervention? Another species involved in rectifying the situation on Earth? Or perhaps the aliens simply wanted to try cold beans for themselves, intrigued how any human could realistically subject themselves to such torments? Peter, my father, has had encounters with aliens and UFOs also recently, and recounted them. Maybe, yes, they are getting us used to their kind and their spacecraft on the real side, and we may then be more comfortable with the prospect of direct physical level encounters. But how then were they connected to us in the way they suggested? Maybe we were a part of their species and civilization in prior lives, as we all have had lifetimes as all kinds of aliens and positions. And so they felt maybe a kinship, a bond, maybe an emotional attachment still. Attachments were something to perhaps be wary of, as innocent as their intentions may be. It is emotional attachments to other beings that may still be there, even millions of lifetimes later, that keep us returning to creation for future lives. Or can it be that these were in fact our real selves? And this would explain how not only were they linked with us, but how it can be that it is through them that we have what capability and skill we currently do. Connection to the real self through awareness, that leads us inexorably on our journeys to recognize the is, and draws us on through all the experiences we have to that end, and the abilities we pick up along the way, that we would not have had should we have failed to connect to our real selves. Maybe then the whole demonstration was that of preparation for passing over the transition from the physical to our next position, the woodlands, the physical level, the spaceships representing the transitional passing over, and the aliens are our real selves, who are managing, through the degree of awareness that connects us to them, where we go to next. For yes, I have had real side dreams that suggest I am in poorer physical health than I realize. Communications with Rebazar and Dwayne on the real side in this regard. So all these people are possibly then those who have made the connection to the true reality, are on their journeys, and are perhaps at a state of physical being where they must pass on. The possibility that the aliens were guides did occur, that maybe they were preparing to take new students across to their next position, rather than have the fate dictated to by the Lords of Karma, that those who hadn't made the real connection can expect. A little like, yes, a few dreams I had shared prior to this one, the one where the female reptilian represented possibly a future lifetime. But I had recently come to the understanding of how we are the decider of everything in our lives, even the time of our passing, and so it was an interesting UFO experience, and yes, contained elements suggesting a passing over theme, but I was here to stay. I might well delight in a UFO trip across the cosmos, but I wasn't about to pass over any time soon. Lindsay wondered why I received so many dreams, and my answer was simply thus. I was prepared to share them, to have the courage to reveal them to the world. including the ones Lindsay misconstrued and found amusing by doing so. Most people would not. Their personal lives too important to them, or they have some personal agenda that sounds really good in their minds. Life is now. Few get the hints, and some that do still won't grasp it. Returning to the woodland theme, it was demonstrating how creation is really a campout, simply a spot, like any we've had in other dimensions and on other planets. And here we are, trying to make each camp spot cosy and convenient, marking our spot. But inevitably things will occur, as life seeks to seize our attentions, with bad weather, and even worse beans, and maybe a mysteriously vanishing tin opener that prevents us from even accessing our beans, cold or otherwise. But paying attention does pay off. We don't have time to get comfy, and along comes something else. The experience unwinds, and in come some UFOs. A big hint as to something that's coming. How this comes out, who sees it, and recognizes it depends on each individual. Everything in creation is created and according to free will, and I am receiving these potential situations and have the courage to provide everyone with the warnings. The real universal guides are giving me the opportunity to decide. They are objectively showing me this and that, but ultimately I decide. People are the decider of whether they leave or not, and some do unnecessarily, where they could have remained and done more. You could say they actually committed suicide. They didn't actually jump in front of a train or eat Lindsay's cooking. They didn't have the courage to face what is taking place now, to take part in it and take on the challenge. Creation is hell and high water. Most people establish comfy personal lives. They want it all done for them, and therein lies the draw of religions. In their minds, they think they are in a la-la land, but it's a prison matrix. It's human farming. But the reality is the recognition of this true reality, which is exceptional and more so than can even be imagined, but you have to want to see it. Most people are afraid to approach this. They'll read the material of the new presentation and experience things, but this is the new nowness now. This is what life is focused on now, and the times of old wisdoms and Paul Twitchell's material, as an example, is not what life is now. Life is always new now. They see what is being presented, they like it, but do they have the courage to step up, activate it, and take part? But that was more than enough for me for today. The floor was open for Peter to step up and share his real side experiences. And as I had a tug of war with one of the dogs over another revealed empty beer bottle, Peter cleared his throat to begin.
At that point, the doorbell rang. Yet another parcel for Gary, our eldest, who was always sending away for things, usually DVDs or books. That reminds me of a dream I had 2 or 3 weeks ago, I said. Go on then, said Lindsay. Well, I was in this house and the doorbell rang. When I opened it, there stood this mountain of a man. Almost Bigfoot in appearance. Did he have any clothes on? Yes, but what looked like furs, especially around his shoulders. He tried to push me back and force his way in, but somehow I had the sudden strength to push him back and slam the door shut. I think perhaps the guides helped me do that. I raced through the house and ensured the back door was locked. Still, it seems, in the same dream, somebody told me the creature had attacked a blind man in the street, but the blind man had successfully fought it off and it ran away. What was all that about then? Dwayne reminded me that a house always signified the personal self in our existence on the physical level, and went on to say that the physical level was full of dark forces trying to sabotage the things we do or build up. This was represented by the creature. This, as I pointed out to Dwayne, linked nicely to another rather short dream I had had a few weeks back. In this, I was in some kind of exhibition hall, in the middle of which was a very large model town or village made of Lego. While I was looking at it, a single brick jumped out of a wall. I pushed it back in place. Another followed suit. Then I woke up. I then asked Dwayne whether there was any significance to the fact that I had no meaningful seeming dreams for several weeks now. They seemed to have completely dried up. The basic response I got indicated that dreams were only part of the thing, and that having really twigged their basic significance, it was time to move further on. Otherwise, what would there be to look forward to in this life but old age? At this point, Kevin kindly murmured that in my case, that was already here. Never mind, Pops, it's your birthday soon, Lindsay chimed in, evidently trying to cheer me up. Thanks for reminding me. With that, the conversation degenerated into more mundane topics.